Evidence Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. This is your host, Don Nikoloff, as you heard in the introduction. On this July the 3rd, 2008, on the West Coast, however, on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, it is now July 4th, 2008, so I wish everyone a very happy Independence Day. I have a brief message here for opening tonight's show before we introduce our guest. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly, all experience hath shewn that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same, the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to law, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance, unless suspended in their operation, till his assent should be obtained, and when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts and pretended legislation. For quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefit of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein any arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time, transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections among us, and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our emigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, They have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Now, one may think, those of you who don't know your history, that I was talking about George W. Bush. I was reading the July 4th, 1776 Declaration. In fact, it's called the Unanimous Declaration of the 13 United States of America. It was what led us to our independence. And it's amazing how many sentences in this declaration apply today. With that, I would like to invite and thank for patiently waiting for me to read that. Tonight's guest, he's a frequent guest on Evident Footprints, and tonight he's going to be a historian. Welcome, Mr. Michael Anthony. Michael, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Don. It was great to hear that again. It's so inspiring.
I know.
And you're absolutely right. You would think you were talking about King George W. Bush rather than King George of England back in 1776.
You know, it's a remarkable document, and definitely was necessary to move for independence. It was necessary that the minds of our founding fathers could come together on that day and put that together. Now, from my historical research, I understand that the original draft was somehow lost in the printing, like so many other important documents, although there are, of course, other copies that were preserved. But it's a shame that such important documents seem to get waylaid. Any thoughts on that?
Well, it's understandable that such precious things like that are treasures and may not have just got waylaid, Don, but may be in very good hands and safekeeping, actually.
Maybe with the Dead Sea Scrolls, you mean?
Well, the Dead Sea Scrolls, of course, are public now.
Yes.
But at least a lot of it is published. A lot of it is still not published. But possibly, like any relic that has a lot of value to it, it may be in the hands of people that really know what it's all about and have it in safekeeping. For example, Don, that Declaration of Independence that you just read was signed in a rush in a particular inn on that given day. And mysteriously, while they were in heated debate over whether or not this was the final draft, do they run with this one? Is this the one they're all going to swear to? And while they're in heated debate, because the pressure's on, they're stressed, they know probably a war is imminent. And so they're under a lot of pressure, and they're arguing in heated debate over this draft of the declaration. And then suddenly, a person appears in the balcony of this inn, and he gives a long oratory. He commands everyone's attention just by his presence. They're all spellbound by this individual's appearance and how pleasing the individual was to see. He was very noble in character, and he gave a great oratory. And at the end of it, he said, "And so God has decreed America is to be free. Hurry up and sign that document." And they all grabbed a pen and they signed that particular draft. Now, there's the part of that story that, you know, really you don't hear about.
Mm-hmm. And who was that individual?
Well, that is the mysterious professor, as George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, knew him to be, and some of the other founding fathers. But he was very close to George Washington. He was George Washington's protector during George's whole life. And so, as we get into what leads up to this protection, why George and who is this mysterious professor, it'd be nice to do a little intro of what led up to these great events of the 1776 period here in the colonies, with an incredible unique set of circumstances developing with these unique individuals all coming together at the same time with the same goals, with the same drive and initiative. It's just unbelievable odds for that to all happen by chance. So, in order to appreciate all that, it would be nice to give a little intro as to how it all came about. And in order to really appreciate it, you have to go all the way back to the beginning of time, the dawn of time, with the fall of man, the advent of mankind as we know it today. And as we look back in history, archaeologists that are real professional, that are honest and open to whatever the truth is, they follow it no matter where it leads them. There's all kinds of archaeological evidence today proving that great civilizations at some points in remote past have existed, and then for some whatever reason, declined, fell apart, and then people were back to a very primitive type of culture and lifestyle, and then over a long span of time, a great civilization flourished again that was truly great. And all through this history, up to now, in our time, it's been viewed that there were basically three epochs. One epoch was the Age of the Immortals, where they had incredible knowledge and power, and they built incredible civilizations. The Great Pyramid being a remnant of that. And then, for whatever reason, as they fought amongst themselves, they went into what seems to be more of a subtle... They were forced no longer to be directly involved with the affairs of mankind, because first you had them, and then mankind comes about, mortals. And they were reigning over the mortals, and the mortals viewed them as gods. And all the legends of the gods, Zeus, and all the legends are based on that. And then at some point, the gods, the immortals, fight amongst themselves. And when they settled their disputes, for some reason, they had to withdraw from being directly involved with mankind. And so then you have mankind himself in a semi-divine state running the show. Because the rulers that took over when the immortals left the scene were kings. And they all claimed to be worthy of that kingship due to lineage leading back to some kind of lineage with a certain god, a certain immortal. And that's how everything evolved or devolved up into modern times. And every country had a king. And they all had the same philosophy. By divine right, they were the king. And the people were their subjects. The king was the sovereign. The people were always the subject. And so that's the way it's always been, all the way up to modern times. And something came about in the 1700 period that was bringing about a whole new renaissance where ideals were coming down literally out of the heavens that were going to be planted in the earth so that another country was going to sprout. And this country was going to create a whole new world order because it was going to shake up the existing order because this new country was not going to have a king. And actually, the people of the country were all going to be like kings, being sovereigns themselves, and their government was to be their subject. That's unbelievable. In their time frame, totally unbelievable, unprecedented, and yet they made it happen by a miracle. They pulled it off and defeated the largest empire in the world at great sacrifice, of course, but they did it, and they created the United States Constitutional Republic, a republic in which the people were sovereigns and their government was their subject. Now, the only other country in the history of the world that we know of that never had a king, in its founding at least, was Israel of old, the biblical Israel. And God himself led the people and said, I'm your God and you're my people. And there was no king. God himself was their king, and they flourished incredibly. And they defeated giants when they went into Jericho and other Canaan, all these cities that had giants, with Joshua sending his spies in and reporting back to him that there were giants and they were like grasshoppers compared to him, and yet they wiped them all out because God, the Almighty himself, was with them as their king. And as long as they were his people and obeyed his rules, then everything was great. And so, of course, we know from history that Israel then, over time, wanted a mortal king like all the other countries, and God granted it, and everything fell apart from that point on. And so no other country could ever say they never had a king that we know of except for the United States. And becoming also an incredible, unique republic. And so that's all factual, and therefore portrays to us that there's a divine activity behind this. And it's active right up into our time. And a lot of Americans today don't even, may not see it and appreciate it, but we have divine activity constantly around us. This country, even in its dire situation that it's in now, still has at its disposal such powerful divine forces available to it if it would only act upon it and call upon it and utilize it. Now, these divine manifestations used to be apparent to the people in the old days, even at some points in the Bible, right over Jerusalem in the sky for 40 days, every day straight, there would be angels riding on horses back and forth in battle gear, sparring each other. And so, obviously, that was a very supernatural activity, and the people knew it well. I mean, they weren't thinking they were all under delusion or hallucinating or anything else. They knew it was divine activity, but they weren't sure what it meant to them at the time. But they knew it was divine activity. And there's even plenty of paintings of even a Da Vinci with UFOs in the sky, in biblical scenery. And of course, when the Lord himself, the King of the Angels, Jesus the Christ, was born in Bethlehem, the three wise men, or magi, or magicians of Persia, followed this star, which led him to where the birth of the Savior was. So if you're following a star, the star must be moving, so it must not be really a star, but something that glowed like a star. So this divine activity has always been with mankind, but it's been more subtle, not so obvious in the affairs of mankind like it was in ancient times when the immortals were the number one rulers on the planet and their activity was obvious. But then when everything went into the background and man seemed to be left to himself, they still act subtly, continuously, and sometimes obviously, but it's not obvious enough yet where everybody's watching it for the most part, and therefore they all can't deny it. Even though we've had Fatima, which is an undeniable event, because even though they're saying it was an hallucination with the sun, And yet it rained and poured so that everything was soaking wet and muddy. And after the solar event, everything was bone dry. The people's clothes, 70,000 people attending this, all their clothes were now totally dry. The ground was dry. That's not hallucination. And so obviously these divine activities are picking back up now in our time and becoming more obvious to the public as we get closer to what appears to be a great grand event. And so with the founding fathers, this divine activity was very, very prominent around them, and they realized it, and George Washington was the center of it. Now this mysterious professor was like an angel. He was known in Europe and simultaneously known to the founding fathers, the colonials. This individual was able to come and go like the breeze, just disappear and reappear. And he knew everything about everything and spoke every language fluently. Hence the term mysterious professor, because they consulted with him because he knew everything. And in Europe, he was highly respected everywhere he went, but still very mysterious and an enigma to those that thought they knew him or tried to figure him out, but only those that were close to him, which were really students, even though they were princes and all kinds of royalty in Europe that were students of his, those that were close to him as students, they knew for sure that they were in the presence of an angelic being. Since he never aged for 200 years while appearing in Europe and conducted mighty, mighty miracles all the time that just baffled everyone. And so he was clearly a divine being. And he was on a mission for the Lord. And the mission was to establish a republic in which the Lord could plant his blessings and have a country of his own, just like Israel of old. And so sure enough, the founding fathers considered themselves like the new Israelites on an exodus. That's because they seen the divine activity around them. They realized it was afforded to them. And therefore, they had the confidence that they were doing something that only could be accomplished with miraculous help.
The help of God.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. The Lord himself. Because the Lord needs a land of his own that he can bless. Just like Israel of old, the people didn't realize they were just being tested. They were being so sorely tested, and that's how it is when you're going to get such a great gift. When you want to bestow a beautiful, incredible gift that's going to make you so happy for your whole entire existence, not just your life, but your whole existence, you want to know they're going to appreciate it. And so you have to test them to see if they really deserve it before you give it to them. So the Israelites kept failing. They didn't understand what the testing was all about, and they thought, boy, if this is what God's all about, why is he so hard on us? I mean, we're out in the desert for 40 years. There's no food. There's no water. It's hot as blazes. And so what's the big deal with this God? So they didn't understand what God was going to grant them if they were worthy of it. And it would start off, Don, if it was granted, the kingdom of heaven. That's what it would have started. And so they failed, and so the prophets then prophesied that it was going to be through his son himself that he'd become king, and that then this blessing was going to come about. And so, of course, that all came about with the birth of the Lord and his mission, and he succeeded, and he conquered death so that he restored the access to immortality for all mankind. And that was the primary mission, was to conquer death. Everything else was all part of the mission as far as teaching people what they are not, and getting a perspective again on supernature. the supernatural, the higher nature, because we are in a fallen nature, which is actually in a lower state. So he was revealing the supernatural higher nature to mankind again to awaken him to what he is. Because the Lord did teach, along with all his teachings, that know ye not, ye are gods. So we are sons and daughters of the Almighty. And yet, we don't know that. And so he revealed that all to us again so that we would remember and awaken our spiritual nature and then simply follow his way of virtuous living so that the rebirth process could come about and we could all then acquire our perfect immortal nature just like he has so we could dwell with him in the kingdoms of heaven indefinitely. And so after he left the picture and ascended back to heaven, from that point on, even though it was over spans of hundreds of years and even then two millennia, mankind began to gradually progress from being barbaric into civilized again. It was just a few hundred years later that the code of chivalry came about, where women were no longer considered chattel, but they were equals to mankind. That was pretty unheard of in its time frame. And it's still maybe having a problem today with a lot of
them. No doubt about that. No doubt.
And yet, that's when it came about, just a few hundred years later, by a certain group of men known as knights. And these knights had to live by this code of chivalry. And one of their duties were to find damsels in distress and help them. And at the same time, women had to be living as ladies under this code of chivalry as well. It was expected of them. And hence, you know, honor done. You know, as you mentioned, the Declaration of Independence, where these great founding fathers were talking about signing this and their honor and all that. Honor. Boy, there's something you don't hear about anymore, huh? Honor. You know, in the old days, if you disgraced your name, your honor, and disgraced your family's name, You used to commit harikiri or suicide.
Yes.
Honor was that serious.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's right. So the code of chivalry came about, and it brought honor and the beginning of civilization to mankind. And ever since the fall, and ever there's been a battle, and the battle is simply good versus evil. God, the Almighty, and His Holy Son, trying to establish his will, the Heavenly Father's will, back on earth. And then those opposing forces that are trying to prevent God's will from prevailing back on earth. Now, that opposing force is not equal to God, and that's a fallacy for anyone to think that. Lucifer is not equal to God. Lucifer is an angel created by God. He's just the son of God. And God is allowing Lucifer to test us. And so, this battle of good and evil has been perpetual, and it's always, in the periods of great civilizations, God's will was prevailing, and a great civilization flourished. Prosperity, harmony, unbelievable conditions of just a beautiful lifestyle. But then, gradually, corruption, evil would work its way in, things would get corrupted. And the corruption would spread enough over time that it was so established that everything would have to rot. Because where there's corruption, there's rotting. And where there's rotting, there is death. So then these great civilizations gradually eroded from corruption. Or corroded would be a better way to view it. And so then it would take eons of time for the Almighty's will to prevail again as man struggled against his fellow man, those serving light, those serving darkness. And so then the founding fathers are our most recent example of men serving light. Yes, they weren't perfect. As the country established itself and began to exercise its muscle, it made major mistakes. There's nothing new about that. And yet, though, The founding fathers knew they were pulling down ideals. Ideals that if they could establish in the earth could start something incredible. And so they strived for that and they succeeded. And that deserves all our gratitude for sure to this day. Because even today with the little freedoms we have, we don't live under the Constitution anymore, so we don't really know what it was like to be under the Constitution where you didn't have property tax, you didn't have income tax, you could come and go like the breeze, and you had all the rights of a king. As long as you didn't infringe on your fellow neighbor's rights, you could do whatever you wanted to. And you were only held accountable to God otherwise.
As far as I see it, Michael, the Constitution still is a verifiable and a live document, and that it's just been ignored.
It's right,
and it's not that the people themselves have agreed to abandon it. It's been abandoned, and what's interesting to me is, although this has been a process, but ever since we've had presidents named George after the first one, in more recent times, we've had two presidents with the first name George who have done everything possible to put this country back in the original state it was in at the time this document was written. And you notice these men, these founding fathers, intentionally avoiding the use of his name, George, the King of England.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite interesting, that he was just referred to as a non-person. They recognized his status, they recognized his location by the name, mm-hmm. by naming his country, but they referred to what he does or what he did at the time. It was what he does and had been doing to oppress the colonies, and they refer to the colonies as states too. So they saw them as independent in and of themselves, but united in their fight against the tyranny that was going on. That's an important point to remember, because a lot of people think that the Independence Day is the birth of our nation. It's our birth date, and that's not true.
That's right. It's the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Yes. And
absolutely right, Don. The Constitution still exists intact. And the only reason why I stated it as that, you know, we're not living under today is because we're not. We are trapped in a counterfeit system that's been subtly superimposed on us, and then through brainwashing techniques, Americans don't even know what the real Constitution is all about, the original Constitution, and therefore they don't know what they're missing as all their freedoms were gradually taken away. And now we're paying property tax again. We are all serfs again. If you don't pay that property tax, they'll kick you off your property. Even though you own your property, there's no bank lien on it, and yet they now can kick you off it because you don't pay your property tax. That means you are not the property owner. You're just a renter still. And you can sell the property when you decide to leave it, but whatever property you acquire again, they're going to make you pay to stay on it. So that's totally un-American. The Founding Fathers no way allowed that. That's why they kicked the British out. They wanted to own property and to work without being taxed for all their hard efforts. And so we have to get rid of this counterfeit system and reestablish the Constitution in full effect, ASAP, to get this country turned around quickly back on track to prosperity and survival, having a future as a constitutional republic.
Yes. You know, the underlying theme, aside from them mentioning all the different ways that they were being oppressed by the king, even though they had fled his rule, he did everything he could. I'm speaking about King George. He did everything he could to continue making life difficult. Now, we have this story that it was the Boston Tea Party was the big moment when, it was one event, but it hardly represented what was going on in this country. And we had slavery at the time.
In the South, right.
Yes, in the South. The underlying theme of this whole thing is just about the oppression and the murder of people to get one's way. Now, we have that same...
Don, you know, you appreciate the attitude that he had, King George, towards the colonialists because they were viewed as bastard children, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
This was a new land. It wasn't really, you know, the homeland of the empire. And the people flooding the new land were leaving because they were looking for an opportunity to have some kind of freedoms, open space, nobody to harass them. And a lot of these people were considered, you know, commoners to say the least. So King George viewed the founding fathers and the original Americans as bastard children. He didn't give one care about them at all.
Oh, yeah, that's quite apparent. And I mean... In every quarter, everything he did was organized and with large armies and you know all of his financial power behind it. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind that had been established long before this country. So he had at his disposal the finances to carry it out. You know, it's interesting that they mention mercenaries. And the use of mercenaries, because we have that same situation going on today, don't we?
You know, these guys, Don, these guys are so current. It's just amazing how we are full circle with where they were in their time frame. And here's another example, Don, just to follow up on that, what you just said, because it's just amazing how current they are with where we are now in our country. Thomas Jefferson himself, when he said, if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their money, first by inflation and then by deflation, then the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property, until their children will wake up one day homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. Boy, if we are not in that exact situation now, Don,
mm-hmm.
with the crashing of the economy and setting everybody up with property that's they can't afford to hold on to anymore, and then crashing all the real estate as well, these guys are going to come in and scaff up all that property, all this property that we should be owning as private Americans. It's going to get all scaffed up and monopolized by these corporations, ultimately. And we're not going to even be able to have it. We won't have any property to call our own.
Mm-hmm. Now,
they pull this off.
Yes, yes. The reference to Indian savages, I have to say, I take exception to, because you have to look at what happened, you know, when we came to this country.
Sure.
And we impinged upon the sacred lands of the inhabitants who were here. We
yes.
dishonored their presence.
Sure.
They're referring to, at least my interpretation, having read that one passage where he's talking about the exciting the domestic insurrections among us, they are referring to the fact that the king probably paid people to go in and anger the Indians. And in other words, they didn't know who was behind it.
I don't know about that, Don, and here's why. The problem with the Indians during the Revolutionary War that they're referring to there stems from the French Indian Wars, where then the colonials were British, and they were fighting with the British against the French and the Indians. So mm-hmm. what started that? Well, it's the old divide and conquer. The British and the French, when they came over and they're trying to own all this land, and they're competing against each other. So what do? They get familiar with the natives, and then they understand the natives, the tribes, which tribes get along, which tribes don't, which tribes are enemies, and then they play against that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the mercenaries they're speaking of were the French, of course.
Yeah, they'll then get friendly with the tribes that they want to fight for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the opposite, the French would then go to the tribes that, you know, they could then get friendly with, to fight for them, and then vice versa with the British. So that's how they played the natives. They used them against each other because they were already fighting. You know, there were tribes fighting with tribes. Even though the Iroquois Nation was definitely an amazing confederation for the Native Americans, but they still played during the French and Indian Wars. They had the Ottawas come down from Canada, and they had them fight each other so that they could use them to conquer the continent. And so after the French and Indian Wars, you had tribes allied to the British, you had tribes allied to the French. And that really didn't change up to the Revolutionary period. And so hence, the tribes allied with the British were fighting with the British against the colonials in the Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an amazing document, and it summarizes actually all the problems we have today. If you take the word colonies and replace it with the word states,
oh yeah,
it applies today, and they keep referring to colonies again as independent states.
Yes, that's right, and they already had the concept of the United States through the mysterious professor's activity. They knew what the plan was. And also during the French and Indian Wars, when Washington was fighting as a colonel for the British in outside Pittsburgh, a great battle, the British got decimated. Washington lost, I believe, two horses. And after the battle, he was one of the few British survivors, if maybe the only one. And when he opened up his coat, four musket balls fell out from inside his coat. He was shot four times. The musket balls penetrated his coat and yet never harmed him in any way. Now, that's what you call divine protection.
Yes, we talked about that at least two other shows, in fact.
That's right.
And I mentioned that somebody got some bad musket balls.
No, that's, you were saying that with Andy Jackson, I think, when Andy they sent an assassin after Andy.
No, I was saying that about Washington.
Too?
Yeah,
okay.
Just making light of that fact. No, it's obvious he was divinely protected.
Well, that's right, Don. Yes, sir. And the follow-up to that particular story, as it used to be taught in our history books, was that years later, when during the Revolutionary War in that same area of Pittsburgh, when Washington was stationed there with his troops, an old Indian chief came down with some braves, introduced himself as the chief over all the nations of the tribes and nations of the Indians during the French and Indian War, and that he decimated the British. And when he spotted Washington as a man of power, so he told his braves to smite him, and every time the smoke would clear, he seen Washington still standing. So after numerous attempts, he told his braves to stop because this man is protected by the Great Spirit. Then, as the chief got older over the years, the Great Spirit showed the chief in dreams that this man's going to be a great father of a great nation. So now that the chief was old, he didn't have much time left. He went down to pay respects to Washington. And that great chief had to be Pontiac.
Because
he was, in that period, the great chief over the tribes. So Washington, definitely an amazing guy. Not perfect, but an amazing guy. He was the glue that held everything together. His troops were going to mutiny twice because they had nothing. Wintertime, you don't even have shoes. You got nothing to eat. You're freezing. You're going to rebel, right? Go back home. And yet, Washington didn't have to do anything. Well, the second time, he did have two guys hung. But the first time, didn't have to do anything. And the soldiers fell right back in line and forgot all about mutiny because of the respect for Washington. Excuse me. And he's definitely an amazing individual. And you bear in mind, once he defeated the British and he had a standing army, what did he do? He let the army go, turned the power over to the Congress, to the people of the country. That's unprecedented. Napoleon wouldn't do that. Caesar wouldn't do that. Alexander wouldn't do that.
King George wouldn't do that either.
No king would. King of France, nobody would.
No.
George Washington did.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? And I think it's worth comparing. You know, we have this coming around full circle now where we have exactly the opposite. We have the dichotomy of that situation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Where the army, the military, which has become multi-branched, has become a power wielded against the people.
Yes, it's looking that way. And at the same time, you have Washington serving two terms as executive, which today they call president, but back in those days it was executive. And after the two terms, they wanted to make him president, king, because the people, like, they could not understand a country without a king. And so they're like, no, we'll just make you king. Now, Washington declined that as well. And he had royalty blood. He was related to the kings of England by his blood. And so he had royalty in him. This guy's amazing. He denied himself opportunities of major power. And he denied himself taking it, seizing it for himself. That's quite amazing.
Yes. Now, you know, there's an interesting point I'd like to bring up. When they established the U.S. Treasury, the first treasurer was Alexander Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, we have all these people who came over from primarily from Great Britain, we'll say, but not exclusively. And so Alexander Hamilton comes up from the West Indies and didn't have a birth certificate or some means of proving his age, other than at the time he arrived, his statement was that he was 13. So they sort of deduced his age and his birth date from that information. But we have the same thing going on today with people who have become presidents or held some high position in our government, whether it's in the Treasury or Secretary of State or the Department of Defense. As I'm finding out, and as you know, and my listeners know, these people are not who they say they are. So the king, in my estimation, the king was able to still get one of his agents into our financial system.
It's possible.
I'd say highly probable.
Well, as far as with Alexander Hamilton, I'm saying it's possible, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't be positive of that. I just couldn't say for sure because I still admire Alexander Hamilton. And, He made a blunder with going with a private bank, but the founding fathers were struggling with the banking issue right from the get-go. And so I'm not sure about Alexander. I mean, he fought right by George Washington's side the whole time.
Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you. We'd certainly have to see all of what was recorded. And you know, that will never happen.
Yes, unfortunately.
But I through the research I've done, and I've gone back pretty far, not quite as far back. Maybe I should extend that. But I did quite a bit of research, let's say from 1840 on, and in both on both sides of the ocean, looking at the lineages, the bloodlines that were being created and inserted into our system here. Anyway, mm-hmm. So this is something that was never given up, even though
we
declared our independence. Did we ever completely gain it? There were many, many indications, even from the founding of the Virginia Company, that that England was involved in our affairs.
Well, of course, England was involved in our affairs and tried to remain involved in our affairs once they were kicked out. And they didn't succeed really well, Don, because that's why they invaded us again in 1812. If mm-hmm. they had enough influence, they would not have a need for another invasion. And they were shut down with 1812. And there was nothing but divine activity all around the War of 1812, as well as the Revolutionary War. You had the mysterious fogs oozing out of the ground numerous times on a midsummer day, when Washington's troops were cornered, like in Manhattan, and the mm-hmm. British were going to close in. The Revolutionary War was over. And yet a fog came out of the ground so fast, so thick, you couldn't see anything, allowing Washington to escape with his troops safely. And that happened so many times that the British generals were writing back to the king, saying, every time we got these guys, the war's going to be over. A fog comes out of nowhere. We can't see nothing. Now, how does that happen on a midsummer day, often, when you're cornered? And so, during the War of 1812, when the British invaded, they burned the capital down, and they left laughing and mocking us, and we didn't have an army for some reason to defend the capital in 1812. And so, out of nowhere, a hurricane, the largest hurricane still to this day that ever hit Washington, D.C., shows up out of nowhere instantaneously, and it starts to put the fires out of the whole capital, simultaneously spawns a tornado. The tornado puts out all the fires that were remaining and then goes after the British and pounds them in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
They left with their tails between their legs, and then when they tried to come up right after that through New Orleans, Andy Jackson stopped them cold. And then they sent assassins after Andy, and those pistols misfired, so they couldn't get Andy. Andy stopped the central bankers from taking over our country. That's why they sent the assassin. And so absolutely, Don, the battle of good versus evil hasn't ceased, and once our country was established by the Lord, then the dark forces are going to infiltrate to try to corrupt everything quickly so the Lord cannot succeed with the plans that he has for the country, which is going to be a great country, so incredible. People today don't even have an idea what this country is about yet, where it's going to be sometime in the near distant future. It's going to be a phenomenal country. And so, just to prove, again, this supernatural activity with the events with good versus evil and the founding of this country, the establishing in 1776 of the July 4th Declaration of Independence. Don, what happened in 1776 in May? The Illuminati's plans for New World Order.
Their New World Order. Right. Of course.
And what happened? Illuminati agent gets struck by lightning, knocked off his horse in Bavaria, and the plans fall into the hands of the people and the officials, and they started arresting these guys. So, what was this bolt of lightning striking an Illuminati agent off his horse? Nothing but divine activity. Exposing the dark forces, their plans, before it even could take root. So this battle's obviously occurring before our very eyes, all the way up into our times, but we need the eyes and the ears to perceive it, and then we'll recognize it for what it is.
Yes. Now we have this you know, this aspect of the British Crown, too, that has its history in Germany. And the Germans disguised who they were by changing. Now, this is somewhat later on. You know, you're talking another 130 or so years, maybe 140 years after the signing of the Declaration of Independence, that, again, this ugly head rears itself in the name of Edward the Seventh and then George the Fifth, which began this German infiltration of our country, but they also infiltrated Great Britain.
Basically, well, that's... You know, Don, actually, when John Adams was president in the early 1800s, it was under his term, or executive, because there was no president then, he was an executive.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be nice to get back to that, because today, oh, the president, the king, you know, the media, it's the president, it's the king. They assign the connotation with president like he's some, you know, king. And yet, he's just an executive working for us. That's all he is.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to get that frame of mind back. But aside from that, John Adams, he was aware that the Skull and Bones crept in and established itself in our country. And he outlawed it. The Skull and Bones that the Bush family are members of, and John Kerry and many other captains of industry, as they call them, they were all traitors under John Adams when he was president. They were considered traitors, and it was treasonous to have the Skull and Bones mm-hmm. exist in our country.
Now, when I refer to Germans, and this is for the listeners too, you know, I'm not saying all Germanic peoples. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm speaking about the dark, secret German societies. You know, what you refer to as the black nobility, those that are alchemists, those that are worshiping evil.
I wouldn't call them alchemists.
Some were. They saw themselves as magicians.
That's true, Don. I mean, alchemy is magic and it's science. So, yes, these individuals that are serving the dark forces are trying to acquire the powers of alchemy as much as those serving the light get to utilize the powers of alchemy, because it's a power, and whoever wields the power obviously has a lot of power. And so the dark forces want it for selfish purposes. The light forces want it to expand the kingdom of heaven.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned giants, and you know, we're familiar with the story of David slaying a giant with his slingshot.
Goliath.
Yes. Okay. Where did these giants disappear? Where did they go?
That's a great, you know, Don.
And who were the giants?
Who were they? Where did they go? Obviously, they managed to survive the flood. The flood was all about wiping out the giants, as well as the miscreations, the half-animal, half-man creations. And yet, they managed to survive, because when the Israelites got into the Palestine area, as it was known in Jesus' time, when Moses had him in the desert, and then soon after Moses passed on, then the Lord allowed Joshua to take the lead and bring the people and take Jericho. And so these giants were all over the place at that point. So they managed to survive the flood. How did they do that?
Well, I would say they may have risen above the floodwaters.
Or went
inside the earth.
That's right. It's one or the other. Mm-hmm. Or both.
And they had to have a really strong cork to keep the water from
These guys are so big, they use their thumbs for the cork.
Yeah. Well, I throw that out there. Of course, you know, we know who we're talking about here. This is the whole thing behind these bloodlines and the issue of shape-shifting and you know, the merging of these multi-dimensional powers, mostly of darkness.
Well, you have, now you have to realize that you've got the good immortal gods and the bad immortal gods, because they fought amongst themselves. And when they established, they sired children with women, mortal women. And these men were semi-divines. You had Hercules, for example. You had Samson of the Israel under the time frame of the Judges, with Samuel was, Samuel, I think, was just very young when Samson was around. And Samson was like the Hercules for the Israelites. And so you have the good ones and the bad ones. And they're fighting amongst themselves to this very day. It's a big game we're in. We're in the middle of this game. And we could be even the prize. As far as if, when, actually when the Lord prevails in this battle over evil, all those that are with the Lord, they're going to be great. Because they're going to become like the Lord, like angels. They're going to be given the gift of immortality and have all the powers of the sons and daughters of God bestowed back on them. So that's the prize for them, to be able to do that for those creations that belong to Father God. The dark forces, because they're cut off from Father God, since their rebellion against Father God, the fallen angels, and their rebellion, they're cut off. They're denied all their luxuries of eternal, beautiful life. It's all cut off from them. So they envy us, they despise us, they hate us. Especially the Christians that are true Christians, that love Jesus in any capacity that they can, out of admiration, respect, and devotion to what Jesus did through his lifetime on his mission for all of us. And so they despise us, they hate us, and if they can ruin our lives in any way possible, that makes them happy as all can be. So we're in the middle of this big battle.
Yep, you, I couldn't agree with you more. Now, it's taken on some different dimensions, too. Of course, it's not just one king or queen. Mm-hmm. But it's many scattered about, even though they may have different titles. They act, as though they're kings or queens. And,
yes.
And this bloodline, and in fact, their power comes from their associations with each other being.
And that's right, Don, but you know, they all know they're serving their master who is prepping them to establish his king. So they're all working, because they're not the king. None of them are the king, but they're living like princes and duchess and royalty, for sure. But in service to their master who's going to give them their king, they're trying to create their new world order for their coming king that they want to reign over us.
Yes, and you know, it what keeps popping up into my mind, so I should probably speak this here before we run out of time. The Pope himself is someone that is a part of this whole thing, these bloodlines and these roles that everyone is playing in oppression, yet acting as though he's our special, unique, and sole agent to know God or to reach God.
Yeah, that's a long stretch.
Yes, it is. And in fact, I was watching a video a couple of nights ago, and I was seeing all the occult symbolism throughout religion, throughout politics, throughout governments, financial systems, medicine, you name it. Even the corporate labels, everything was using You know, I referred to alchemy, using the occult symbols and using them in very perverse ways too. Just you know, reverse. And there are there are occult symbols that actually have great spiritual power, but they're misused and used against people instead of in honor of what they represent universally.
Sure.
Yeah, and so it's sort of flaunting these symbols before God as if to say, look at, you know, we honor your symbols, but they become perverted.
No, it's not. It's actually they're dishonoring the symbols.
Well, yes, but I'm saying they're honoring it in the sense of using it, but they pervert the use of it.
Oh, yeah.
Is the point I'm making.
Yeah, these symbols are like hammers and saws and axes. You can either build with them or you can destroy things with them.
Of course, the current Pope's last name was Ratzinger.
Oh, boy, that's not a warning.
and I have to share this with you and the listening audience. His picture flashed. They were showing sort of a flash video of every corporate symbol, and there were hundreds, maybe even a couple of thousand of these symbols that just flashed every half a second on the screen. And they showed a picture of the Pope, and it said Papa Ratzi underneath it. I thought that was kind of cute.
I think that's an interesting irony right there.
Exactly. Papa Ratzi. You know,
Daddy Rat, huh?
Yes. We could go on and on and on with this discussion tonight, but
sure.
I do want to take a moment and acknowledge and honor all the military around the planet, the American military that is serving the country with the intention of protecting our freedoms. I don't use the word liberty that much because that's a permission and it seems to have a schedule to it, you know, like the men on a ship get liberty for a couple of hours and they're allowed to go on land and
that's right. It's a permission.
You know, it's temporary, where freedom is given by God.
It's divine.
Yes. And so I want to honor all of the soldiers, the men and women in our military, whether it's whatever branch, whether it's Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, the Border Patrol, anyone that's really doing what our military was created to do. I want to honor that. I cannot honor wanton and senseless murder of innocent people for the sake of enriching corporations and the military-industrial complex. I cannot do that. In fact, my research shows me that the soldiers are being treated almost as badly as many of the people that are suffering.
They're just cannon fodder to the big corporations, the corporations that Thomas Jefferson warned us about.
Yes, and so did several other presidents. Dwight Eisenhower was one in his farewell speech.
That's right. But what amazes me is Thomas Jefferson actually, in his time, already could perceive that corporations out of a private banking system would destroy, devour this country and steal it from the children of the founding fathers. That's just phenomenal foresight, incredible perception.
Well, back then, men were doing their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they took their roles very seriously, and they really had a special dispensation for being in the positions that they were in. Those were ordered of God. I'm certain of that.
Absolutely. Just look at, study any of their writings, their memoirs or diaries, anything they published. Look at the command of the vocabulary. Look how they spoke, actually, how they talked, conversed, and you'll see that they were a lot smarter than a lot of us. Just the way they spoke to each other, with their power of command over the vocabulary, a lot of Americans today, if they were to read their works, they wouldn't even know what they were reading. They wouldn't understand what they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because the words are too big. So, I mean, yeah, the Founding Fathers, unique men in unique times, all under the providence of the Lord himself. Nobody can ever argue that based on all those facts that we covered tonight.
Well, we are out of time, Michael Anthony. I want to thank you for being on the show. Of course, we're going to talk about this topic more in the future. I know we have you scheduled for another show. I think it's in the third week, if I'm not mistaken, of July.
Great, John. Great. I look forward to that one.
And we've got a lot of good shows coming up. As far as I understand, we are going to be on the air tomorrow evening, the evening of the 4th of July. Our usual Friday guest is Jim Murray, unless something happens and we end up playing a repeat. I'm presuming we will be live tomorrow night. And we'll be discussing things that are going to be affecting all Americans over the coming weeks and months, and maybe the next few years as well. In the meantime, I want to thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Don.
And
wonderful, always.
I wish you a wonderful, blessed Independence Day.
Thank you. You too. God bless the United States of America, Constitutional Republic.
Amen. And I'd like to thank the listening audience that tuned in tonight, as well as Don Newsom and Seth Hendrick on the sound. And I wish everyone a very happy Independence Day. Be safe. We'd like to have you back again tomorrow, or if you miss tomorrow's show, definitely next Monday. Be safe. Have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.
Details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.
Would you like to know the real secret? I'm not talking about the new movie or book. I'm talking about you. You are the biggest secret in your life. Your secret could unlock your highest potential and fulfill all your dreams. What is that secret? The knowledge of who you are. This is Robert Lee Camp, author of The Cards of Your Destiny and Love Cards. I am the host of a new show here on bbsradio.com called Mr. Destiny. You can listen in or join in any Monday night at 7:30 Pacific or 10:30 Eastern on the Late Night section. Come on the show, tell me your birthday, and I will reveal some of your secrets. Maybe ones that can open up the doors for new possibilities for you and your life. Your birthday is the key to your destiny. I invite you to come explore your destiny with me and find out what the Book of Destiny has to say about you. Hope to see you then. Mm-hmm.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Sal Bellois. You're listening to BBS Radio, Los Angeles, California. You can hear my